Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And now U.S. troops in Afghanistan until 2024, after President Obama has long put the deadline at 2014. Secretary of State John Kerry had announced that a bilateral security agreement had been reached with Afghan President Hamid Karzai. Now that agreement seems up in the air, but we'll hear about the details of how many troops the U.S. wants to stay there until 2024. NPR's Sean Carberry joins us from Kabul. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Brian. Good to be with you.
And David Sanger is also with us. He's chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times and author of Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power. Hi, David.
Great to be with you, Brian.
I think we have less of a delay on the phone from Kabul than we do from Washington.
That's probably the case. So,
David, all we've ever heard from President Obama has been his determination to keep troops in Afghanistan only until next year. Now he wants to keep some troops there another decade?
Well, in the course of President Obama's description, pardon me, of the long-term plan in Afghanistan, they have always talked about, but never highlighted, having some kind of enduring presence. This was also contemplated in Iraq initially, but they never reached the accord with Iraq that they seem to have reached and now perhaps are delaying with President Karzai. The idea would be to keep some small number of troops measured in the thousands, but under 10,000, and probably for American troops, perhaps under five, as trainers, which is largely the role that a larger presence is playing right now, and pretty much behind high walls, not patrolling the country in a way that it would build the resentments of the country or expose them to a lot of casualties. The concept is that the Afghan troops simply aren't ready to go be able to do everything themselves, given their desertion rates, the difficulties they have in transporting people, and so forth. But certainly many Americans who were listening only vaguely, I think, would be surprised to discover that anyone would be left past 2014. When you talk to the administration, it sounds like they're envisioning something of 2 or 3 years, even though the agreement would certainly run to 2024 and beyond.
Listeners, are you surprised to hear this news? And what do you think when you hear about a potential agreement to have a presence in Afghanistan of U.S. troops until 2024? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. NPR's Sean Carberry in Kabul. Fill us in more on how many U.S. troops, if numbers are mentioned in this agreement. And I heard there would be 9 locations or something like that around the country, little bases, if bases are the right word, for a decade. What's actually planned?
Well, yes, you're right about the 9 bases. That's been discussed for quite some time, which is a substantial reduction from the number that have been here over the last decade or so. In terms of the number of troops, it's been kicked around anywhere from 3,000 to 9,000. In addition to troops that would be conducting training operations of Afghan forces, there would be some who would be here doing limited counterterrorism operations, essentially going after remnants of Al-Qaeda or affiliated groups. But they've never specified the exact numbers, and NATO countries are also waiting for this U.S. deal to get done to determine how many troops they will keep here after 2014. So the total number of U.S. and NATO troops has been talked about up to 15,000 total, but again, this is all very much in flux, and all of this is tied to the U.S. and Afghanistan signing a deal.
And about the role, David said no combat role, and I think that's what we hear from the administration. But I've also read that the ability for them to make night raids has been a sticking point in the negotiations.
Yeah, the term night raids has not been used directly in the talks over the last week or so. The issue has been whether or not U.S. troops that are in Afghanistan after 2014 can enter Afghan homes under any conditions. Now, often that was in night raids, but it could be other searches and operations. President Karzai said after 2014, absolutely no circumstances can a U.S. soldier ever enter an Afghan home? Secretary of State John Kerry, in negotiations over the last week, was able to get an exception, essentially in the case of extreme circumstances. If the lives of U.S. troops are in danger, they would be able to enter an Afghan home. He posed the theoretical scenario of a kidnapped soldier being held in a house here. And that seemed to be the last sticking point in the agreement before it went to the Loya Jirga yesterday, the Grand Assembly that's now discussing the deal and will give President Karzai an advisory opinion of whether to sign it.
212-433-WNYC. And here's Eric in Brooklyn, an Afghanistan war vet. Eric, is that right?
Yes.
Thank you for your service, and thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
So go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I felt like this decision is, or, you know, potential decision is a betrayal of the things that I thought Obama stood for. I think we've given them, we've given Afghanistan more than a decade of our time and our commitment, our soldiers' lives, and I think it's time to leave.
Eric, thank you very much. So David Sanger, Eric's question raises a question of why U.S. troops would stay there. Is it to help Afghanistan, which Eric kind of suggests that it would be? We've given them enough of our, you know, time and energy and blood. Or is it because the U.S. fears that if all the Americans left, the Karzai army, the Afghanistan military, would be too weak, the Taliban would run roughshod, and then al-Qaeda could reestablish its bases, or other things that would then wind up following Americans home?
I mean, the only reason to leave troops there would be, and the only case the president could make, is what's in America's national interest here. And remember, these are troops that are watching over not only Afghanistan, but the country we haven't mentioned yet so far, Pakistan. Okay, so we've heard of two missions so far, training and the counterterrorism mission. The counterterrorism mission includes keeping an eye on Pakistan's nuclear arsenal. There are more than 100 nuclear weapons. As you and I have talked about before, Brian, I discussed in Confront and Conceal a big scare that the United States had in 2009, early in the Obama administration, when they thought a Pakistani weapon or the materials to make one may have gone loose. The president turned to his counterterror teams that were in the region and discovered he didn't have the specialty capabilities he needed there to track a nuclear weapon. They're out there now. So part of the idea here is, in Afghanistan, keep an eye on al-Qaeda cells, anybody who would once again be using the territory to train, keep an eye on al-Qaeda, keep an eye on the Pakistani Taliban, whose leader was killed the other day in a drone strike. And then the unspoken part for the administration, keep a very close eye on Pakistan and its nuclear weapons.
Sam in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Brian. When are we going to learn our lesson from history? Alexander the Great, British Empire, the Russian Empire, they all collapsed. They bled to death. And now the Afghanis, the locals, are having the last laugh because we are there. We've been there for 10 years. We squandered $2 trillion over there. Nothing has come out of it. Karzai, the puppet government, does not control more than four blocks of Kabul. Now, if we are there anywhere for any excuse, they will come and attack us no matter where we are. And they don't want us there. I mean, the reason why we want to be there is because the Zionists from Wall Street are pushing for another war down the road. And they want our footprint to be there so the Wall Street profit can be, compounded.
What was the end of your comment? And that what? That's why?
That's why they want our footprint to be there to enhance a future war.
Sam, thank you. So, David, I'm going to come back to you on this. David Sanger, New York Times chief Washington correspondent and author of Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power. He said the Zionists and Wall Street. So how much does Israel, if Israel cares at all, want the U.S. to maintain a military presence in Afghanistan? And how much is this a kind of U.S. economic imperialism? Because Obama used to be against keeping American troops in significant numbers all over the world And, you know, people are always suspicious, as I guess the caller is, that this in some way has to do with oil and the flow of goods and wealth more than it has to do with national security per se.
I can't imagine what possible interests Israel, oil interests, others would have in Afghanistan over any short period of time. It's not on the Israelis' agenda. This is a war that has cost us upwards of $1 trillion so far. The whole reaction to 9/11 has been more like $3.4, $3.5 trillion. This is not a set of conflicts I think that anybody would view has benefited the U.S. economy. And so I think this is part of the president's light footprint strategy, which is to try to pull out the numbers as fast as he can and keep a minimal, as minimal presence as he can. Remember here that when the president came in, he ordered a surge in Afghanistan and then a very fast withdrawal, much faster than the Pentagon wanted. The Pentagon had a 10-year plan for Afghanistan. He brought it down to three or four.
Sean Carberry, NPR correspondent in Kabul. What does Hamid Karzai want? We seem to get mixed signals from him all the time. On the one hand, you Americans are interfering with my country. I want you to get out. And on the other hand, oh, my God, don't get out or we're going to fall apart.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much any speech that he gives, there are these two extremes that come out. He's had a very tense relationship with the U.S. In his speech yesterday, he said, I don't trust the U.S. The U.S. doesn't trust me. He did not, in his speech yesterday before the Loya Jirga, he did not make a passionate plea for the people at the Jirga to approve the security agreement. He did say it's in Afghanistan's interests. Of course, Afghanistan wants continued money from the U.S., but he wasn't selling the agreement to the assembly there. And then towards the end of his speech, he makes this comment that had all of us in the press gallery looking at each other, trying to make sure we understood what he said, which was effectively that even if the Loya Jirga and Parliament approve this security agreement with the U.S., he won't sign it until after the presidential elections next spring. Now, the U.S. has been saying for the last year they wanted this deal done as of last month, and they're willing to wait now through the end of this year, and that's as far as they're going to go. President Karzai saying no after the elections next year, which might not be resolved until the summertime. So there's a lot of head-scratching right now trying to figure out whether this is another last-minute negotiating tactic on his part or whether he is holding fast now to this new statement that he will not sign the deal until potentially next summer.
What about on our part? Why does the U.S. care so much whether it happens in December 13 or June 2014?
Well, the issue for the U.S., and they've said all along, is this deals with budget issues, troop planning, troop movement, that they have to figure out how many troops are going to be left here, if any, after 2014. That takes time to plan, to arrange for what troops, what supplies they need.
Uh-huh.
And then NATO countries are also waiting for this agreement so they can decide whether they're going to keep troops here as well.
So
they're just simple logistical arguments they've been making that it has to get done this year.
So we've heard from a few callers who want all the American troops out. Sheila in Brooklyn, a former UN peacekeeper.
Hi,
Sheila. Where were you a peacekeeper?
I was in Sierra Leone. But I work in different places around the world.
And you have a different view?
Yes, because in a peacekeeper doesn't mean I was a soldier. I was in public information.
Okay.
It doesn't mean when foreign troops come into a country, that you can't just leave like that. And this is why, you know, I've always maintained governments are good at talking to each other but not to educate our people. You can't get out suddenly. First of all, foreign troops in a country, you impact the social norms and mores of a country. You impact the whole political dynamics of that country. You change things so much in that country. You create internal enemies among the people, not having trust for each other. You can't leave that country suddenly. I think when Obama said, we will pull out by the end of X year, doesn't mean that the entire U.S. troop is going to get up and leave the country. You can't do that.
Are you watching Iraq in that respect? Because
yes,
we did completely
I'm watching Iraq.
Get up.
I'm really, really saddened by what's happening in Iraq. I was in Morocco recently, and I had an Iraqi colleague who was saying they're talking about cessation from Iraq completely in the Kurdish area. You know, we have created these problems when we go into people's country. And this is why, you know, you talk about war, everybody's, you know, war, going to people's country. And they don't know what they're talking about because it's never happened here.
So the way to fix the problem, is to stay in and fix it.
Is the development aspect of it, mm-hmm. is to leave people with technical skills, whether it's true, I don't know how they're going to do it, but to help to train mm-hmm. those people and to build trust. They're not doing that yet.
Sheila, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it. So to end, David Sanger, talking about Iraq and the fact that U.S. troops are completely out of there now after 2011, there was a similar U.S. plan for Iraq. You referred to it before. But the Iraqis refused to grant military personnel from the United States immunity from Iraqi prosecution of any crimes that they were suspected of there. Isn't that why that deal fell apart? And is that a sticking point here, too?
That is why that deal fell apart. And we thought that would be a sticking point here in Afghanistan. It doesn't appear to be. It appears to be more about Karzai himself and his own view of how he is seen to be standing up to the Americans. You know, the biggest charge for Karzai over the years was that he was sort of Washington's lapdog under both President Bush, and he came to power, of course, in part because of the American invasion and was placed there by the U.S., and then the same charge during Obama's time. And he's been a very difficult partner to work with for all the reasons that you've just heard about. And I think that the biggest problem would be that if, in fact, he leaves this agreement until after the election, that then raises the question of whoever wins that election may want to go in and say, I need to reopen the entire negotiation. Mm. And I think that's something that the Obama administration doesn't want to get into.
David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times and author of Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power. NPR's Sean Carberry in Kabul. Thank you both so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up after the news, we will play one of the most incredible moments, and believe it or not, it was a live public radio moment on November 22nd, 1963, the day that President Kennedy was shot. Talk about where were you then? Where will you hear what was broadcast live on WGBH in Boston that day? And then we'll take calls from people who are old enough to remember and people who are not, and we'll have a couple of great guests too, Peniel Joseph, historian, and the veteran newsman Marvin.
If something like
so, that's coming up after the news, which is coming up right now with Richard Hake. Richard, what's happening?